Hi, I'm David and welcome to the Datasaurus Rex podcast, where we interview data visualization experts and get to know them and their data vizzes that little bit better. By the end, you should learn some new skills and get inspired to enhance your own data viz game. And today's guest is Sarah Bartlett, who is a Tableau ambassador, but also the co-lead of the famous London Tableau user group. Welcome, Sarah.
Hi, David.
Hey, how are you going?
Oh. I'm good, thanks. Thanks for inviting me on.
Hey, no worries. My pleasure. Thanks for coming. I would look forward to getting to know you and your vizzes a little bit better. But before we go on, would you like to add anything else to for the audience to get to know you that little bit better before we carry on?
Yeah, sure. So my name's Sarah. You probably know me from Twitter as Sarah Loves Data. I'm quite active on there. I'm a Tableau social ambassador. By day, I work for Slalom in London, where I'm a Tableau consultant. So I work with clients and help enable them using Tableau. I also do a lot of stuff outside of work, Tableau related. So I do a lot of Makeover Mondays. I was a finalist in iViz Europe last year.
Nice.
Okay,
great. So yes, thanks. That's awesome. Welcome. So we're going to explore one of your vizzes, speaking of iViz. I believe this was what you entered for the feeder. Was this the European feeder or is this the global
one? It's the European one last week, yeah.
Okay, amazing. For those of you who aren't aware of how this podcast works, we're going to go through one of Sarah's vizzes, understand how she's made it, her approaches, and then after that, we're going to go into some rapid-fire questions for Sarah. So let's dive in. So the viz we're looking at is... looks like it's talking about plastic waste in the oceans, primarily plastic bags. So I guess the first question today is, what was the inspiration for this viz? Would you like to guide us through what the inspiration for this viz is? And I'll go explore the viz for our audience whilst you talk.
Yeah, sure. So the theme for iViz Europe this year for the feeders was energy and sustainability. So I decided to focus on the sustainability route. It was funny because it coincided with Iron Quest, which I think we're going to talk about later, where our theme was environmental issues. So I'd already been thinking about things around the topic. And initially, I wanted to do something on plastic bottles and around festivals, because festivals in the UK are striving to reduce their waste, primarily plastic waste. Oh. And so this year, Glastonbury have eliminated all plastic bottles. So I thought it'd be really cool to do like a festival poster. I don't know if you've seen the Glastonbury like kind of festival posters this year, but they're really cool, black background, colourful. Oh, and I was going to do this whole thing around plastic bottles. And I quickly realised that the data wasn't available. It's very limited data specifically for festivals. So I could have done it on reducing plastic waste just in general, but I decided not to. And then while I was doing the research for that, I found a lot of things about plastic bags. I thought plastic bags was just something that we can all relate to. I think everyone at some point has used a plastic bag. And I know in the UK, there's been a strong focus on reducing plastic usage. And so you've got the likes of all the big supermarkets have, I think now pretty much all eliminated single-use plastic bags. And it's something that we see daily. So it's something I thought we can all relate to that. Everyone knows what a plastic bag is. And everyone uses some kind of bag at some point, like most days, you know. So
totally, yeah.
Yeah. So in terms of the design inspiration, I was looking at Ken Flerlage's Killing Fields viz, which focused on the rhinos. I really liked some of the design elements that he did. So that was, in terms of the design, that was one of the inspirations for that.
Awesome. Okay. Yeah, no, it looks really clear and well thought out. And like, you know, there's a lot of information, but it flows nicely, which I love. It's, you know, it's not all like in your face. It's very, you know, it tells a staggered story over time, which is cool. Brilliant. Okay, cool. No, this is awesome. Okay, so next question is, how did you go about collecting the data? You mentioned you did a bit of research, but did you find there were like databases, or did you have to go searching for each country's metrics?
Yeah, so the country metrics are from Wikipedia. So there's a lot of like nice tables on Wikipedia, which I imported into Google Sheets using the import HTML function, which brings a table through. It's quite nice. I wanted to see the year that the countries implemented some kind of plastic bag legislation, because you see that there were some early adopters. And in fact, England was one of the last to do anything. it was quite interesting because you saw the likes of Scotland and Wales kind of implement a plastic bag charge, and England learnt from that and learnt from some of their mistakes. So that was quite interesting to read. And then in terms of the other data, there's a lot of data from DEFRA. So since we've been charging for plastic bags in England, any company that employs over 250 people and supplies plastic bags have to report how many single-use plastic bags they've supplied, and also the what they've done with the proceeds. So have they given them to good causes, or have they kept them? So that's available from the from DEFRA. So it's like the ONS website. Nice. So that comes through in a nice like Excel.
Okay, that's good. Yeah, having clean data is always a help. I often find, half the time I'm making visits, I spend at least 20-25% trying to wrangle the data or clean it up. And it's never fun. Yeah.
No, I mean, I think there's about 10 data sources in that workbook, but some of them are kind of like this long, like 10 rows in Excel, where I've just copied something that I've seen on a site.
Right. But that's great that you've been very thorough with your sources. And this is something I've seen with the other guests we've had on the podcast. You've had a very smart idea to use the hover, functionality the tooltip functionality of Tableau to, you know, show all your sources without having to make the viz twice as tall. So that's awesome. Great, great stuff.
I was quite conscious of that. I could have taken up half the viz in itself, all those sources.
So. Yeah, no, it's very well researched. But this is great though, because it's a ton of insights, which we can clearly see. So amazing. Okay. Next question. How did you approach the design of this viz? Because there is a lot here, which is never a bad thing, but it unless you haven't, it's not laid out properly. But it seems very clearly, there seems like there's a lot of thought and design choices behind this. So I'd love to understand more about that.
Yeah, sure. So I wanted to lay it out in kind of a nice flow. So we had an introduction, kind of what are plastic bags? Why are they bad for the environment? And then move more into the case in Europe. I think the EU legislation has kind of led a lot of countries to implement something of their own. And that was kind of like the trigger. So it was important to mention that. And then I wanted to show what happened in the countries within the UK and what they'd done individually, because it's interesting that they've all done something different at a different point in time. And then I wanted to flow more into the supermarkets. I think, if I remember rightly, the 86% of single-use plastic bags come from supermarkets in the UK.
Wow.
Which isn't surprising, I guess, because, I mean, if you go to the supermarket, you tend to get like quite a few bags to take your shopping home in. So I wanted to show what they'd done. And I mean, like, everyone has their own favorite supermarket, right? Like, for me, it's Tesco's.
Yeah.
And it's funny enough, Tesco's are the worst offenders. But then at the same time, Tesco's have the biggest market share. So although Tesco's look like they're doing a really bad job, they're actually, you know, it's kind of, they're all kind of similar in terms of the market share and what you'd expect. But since the data has been released from DEFRA, a lot of those supermarkets have actually eliminated plastic bags or single-use plastic bags altogether. But then, interestingly, I started doing more research, and now you've got the issue with Bags for Life. So Bags for Life are the thicker bags, cost 10p, whereas the single-use bags cost 5p. And I'm a victim of this, where basically I'll forget to take any plastic bags to the supermarket, so I'll buy more single Bags for Life, which are supposed to last, I think, though it says they need to be used 4 times to balance the carbon impact with a single-use plastic bag would have had. But then I forget to take them back, and I think a lot of people just, because it's only 10p, they're like, okay, well, I'll just buy some more. And then you've got that issue. So now they've seen, since the single-use plastic bags usage has gone down and some supermarkets have taken them away altogether, people are now just buying Bags for Life like they were single-use one. And they weigh, I think it's like 4 times as much. So I wanted to kind of put that in at the end as a kind of point to note that it's not all rosy, and we're not all using a lot less plastic.
Yeah, it's not like job done, we can stop now. Yeah.
No, not at all. No.
That's interesting.
And then at the very bottom, I wanted a call for action. So there's a link there. You can go and actually go through to a site where you can actually recycle your plastic bags as well. Which
smart,
is
smart. I do like that, because I think, a lot of visitors, they nail the kind of inspire or inform piece, and everyone's like fired up, and then they don't lead them anywhere. So it's great that you've got a call to action. I feel, if you do have a viz which is meant to like get people fired up about a thing, you should definitely funnel that kind of enthusiasm somewhere with a call to action. So that's awesome to see that you've done that. Yeah. Nice. And that's really interesting with, Sorry,
I was going to say, so for that, for this quiz, I didn't actually draw it out. I tried numerous times, and I just didn't know how I was going to lay out the elements. So I ended up just building it piece by piece and just seeing how it worked and moving things around.
It's fair enough. So it's like an organic kind of thing. So you had an idea for the sections, is that it? And then you just kind
Yeah, so I kind of broke it down a bit of paper that the sections I was going to have, but I didn't quite know at that point what I was going to put in those. So I built out all my charts and then kind of laid them out in the logical kind of way.
Yeah. No, no, that makes, I mean, that's definitely valid. There's no right or wrong way to do this. Yeah, we've had other guests who are like, sketch it out. Others, build organically. So yeah, I think that's one of the good things to learn. You can get great visits without just doing one prescriptive like way of doing it. So it's really good to hear that this was organic. So it's, and it's just really awesome. I'm learning so much already. Like, with Tesco, they are the biggest, but it's quite amazing how they've nearly halved their bag usage in like 1 year, which is, considering how the market share they have, that's pretty impressive.
And now that would be zero as well. So if, when they release their stats for this year, that will, they won't be doing any single-use plastic bags anymore.
Wow, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, but you've got the, I don't know, 800,000 bags for life that they're giving away. So
that's a good point. But I guess it's, you're right, there's still work to do.
I was going to say, I don't know what the, what's it in Singapore? Do they charge for plastic bags?
I think they did. And then I think they stopped for a while. It's kind of, I guess we're too small. Like, I think sadly it wasn't, I guess, marketable enough. Like they did it, but I think it didn't like add any value to the supermarkets doing it, which is a big shame. Whereas they should just take a stance and be like, no, we're not going to contribute to this. I used to live in Australia for about 6 years, and I was following the news there because they introduced a no bag policy last year. And it was met with a lot of fierce resistance by a lot of people who had nothing better to do. So it's kind of...
It's the same in the UK. I was looking at some headlines, and it's like the end of the world. Like, we're going to face this 5p charge. I mean, one guy even got arrested in Asda on the first day because he refused to pay 5p for a bag.
Oh my goodness.
And he walked out the shop with this bag and then caused a scene that he had because he hadn't paid for it.
Wow.
And that's just the UK for you, I guess.
that's like, I mean, there's sort of important issues, and then this one's pretty low. You know, it is funny how people get used to stuff, but and they get really fired up about something so small. But bag apocalypse. So it's not good. But this is great because, like, again, I think I kind of purposely, I did look at your vids, but I purposely didn't like go into it too much until this talk, this interview, because I love just finding these great insights as we go along, and like all these little, like, interactive elements. So it's great to see, like, you, using a ton of tooltip stuff, which encourages engagement. You see like the overall stats for like Tesco, but then you can kind of hover over and get even more details, which is awesome. And I could look at this forever, but I guess we got to keep the interview going. So but it's a great viz though. It's a sign when a viz is great, like when someone just gets lost in it and like just want to keep clicking and exploring it. Okay, great. Yeah, well, I guess we've already covered some insights already, but if you had to pick one or two, what would be like the top insights you've learned whilst creating this viz?
Well, it would be, I guess, around the bag for life thing. It's something that I hadn't really thought about because, you know, we've suddenly seen these plastic bags, the single-use plastic bags, like phase out, and all of a sudden they're not available anymore, but you don't quite notice it as it's happening, and now it's apparent from looking at the stats that people have just, they're not changing their habits, but they're just shifting from one bag to another, when really I think the UK government were hoping that 5p charge would make people turn to those longer life bags, not the 10p ones, but maybe the £1 bags that you can use again and again and again. And I don't think that's really the case. That was probably the number one insight. And also the impact of the environment. So I didn't realise that when plastic bags kind of just start to degrade, they disintegrate, which is one of the reasons why they're so bad. So they're when they're in the sea, they break up into little pieces, and then fish and other wildlife can ingest them. So it may not be that the whole bag as one. It would just be like little pieces.
Yeah, so I've heard about that.
Like they're really bad, like all round. Like they get stuck in trees. They animals can get caught up in them. Mm. And to sea turtles, they look like jellyfish. That's why I drew a little picture there. Imagine an upside down plastic bag and then a jellyfish that you can't tell the difference.
That's such a shame. Yeah, because they're not going to have any awareness of that. And then, poor things. Yeah, it's and also I guess speaking of that, like I've heard stories or read articles where it's getting into the food chain. Plastic is literally getting into the food chain, and it's starting to appear in humans too, because we're eating the things in the sea who are eating our plastic. Yeah. And it's so this thing which is like, human behavior, like, oh, it doesn't matter, throw it away, who cares? We should care, because now it's actually coming back and, you know, biting us in the butt pretty badly. So.
And no one really knows how long they take to degrade, because it could be up to 500 years, it could be 1,000 years. We're not entirely sure, because they've not been around that long to test it.
Yeah.
So what the really scary stat is that every single plastic bag you've ever used in your life is still in existence in some shape or form somewhere. Unless it's been like you know, made into another bag, but it's a scary stat. So
it's one of those things where it's just incomprehensible. Like you hear the numbers and you're like, whatever. But I think these kind of visits help bring it to life, and you're like, oh, actually, I need to rethink about this, because even if it's not going to affect me, it's going to affect like, you know, kids or future generations and that kind of stuff. Yeah. So that's not good for anyone. But again, this is why I love the Tableau community or the DataVis community at large, because people, you know, use these tools and are very passionate about this, and they help bring these things to life where before it wasn't possible, right? Like the reach or the impact you could have would be quite small, but now with these, Tableau public, you put it online, everyone can see it, you control the narrative and make the stats and your research come to life. It's amazing that we're in this age where we can do this stuff and help. Yeah, bring light to these causes. Okay, so what skill or skills did you learn from doing this project?
So I tried to focus on design on this one, and also using some map tricks. So I've used a transparent map before, I've put a transparent circle over a map before, but before transparent sheets, that blocked out any interactivity. So in my feeder for iInvis Europe last year, I've got some circular maps in there, but they're not interactive. So I built them in Mapbox, but they're just there for the cosmetic kind of purposes. Yeah. They don't do anything. Because they have that they have like a transparent circle floated over the top. I think it's a similar technique you might have seen Johnny Walker and Simon Beaumont do. But now obviously we have transparent sheets, it means we can apply a similar technique but have that interactivity in the map still, which is really great. So this was my first time attempting that. And I thought I'd nailed it. And then I published to Tableau Public, and my map came up as a big white box. So it just had the background had gone white. It just looked horrendous. So I ended up contacting Simon Beaumont for like help. Like this is hours before like deadline. So sorry, I really need your help. Something's gone really badly wrong here. And it was to do with the zoom. So you have to zoom into the map to take all of the settings off and then zoom out again. Quirky kind of way of doing it. But because it looked beautiful on desktop, and it's one of those things you publish to Tableau Public, you never quite know how things are going to change. And that was for me one thing. And it just looked horrendous. We had this big white square in the middle. So that was a big learning curve. Cool. And then I used for the curvy bump chart, I actually used Kevin Flerlich's tutorial that he put out recently. So keen to try that. I thought that looks a little bit nicer than the standard straight line kind of slope chart. So
yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, you don't need like the super level of fidelity of like the points being exactly where they are. It shows sort of change in rank per se.
With that Tesco's one. That was quite nice. Yeah,
no, this is
and
awesome.
Then for everything else, I did a lot of stuff in PowerPoint. So it was a lot of playing with PowerPoint and building some of those images. So like the circle with the mini circle below, that's all built in PowerPoint. So I had some fun trying to work those out and figuring, making them look nice. So, yeah, nice. I think this bit started off in PowerPoint. I literally built out all the elements first before building anything in Tableau.
That's really interesting. So you're like literally the third guest I've had in a row who said they use PowerPoint to like design, yeah, like or build shapes, which every time I hear this, I'm like, that makes so much sense. Because, you know, why would you need like an expensive graphics package like it's Illustrator or Photoshop?
Yeah.
Where, you know, often for these fizzes, you just need some like very kind of simple, clear, scaled like shapes, right? You don't need to have all the extra bells and whistles. And yeah, I guess if you do build a viz in those other tools, there's a temptation to make it more complex, but then they detract from the viz. So, and I guess
It's like Ken, they're big like inspiration for me in terms of that PowerPoint stuff, because they've done so much in there. And and then Pooja as well used to do a lot of things in PowerPoint, making transparent like kind of backgrounds and things. So it's been a constant thing I've seen people do kind of while being in the Tableau community. And I personally don't have access to like Adobe Illustrator or anything. So I mean, PowerPoint does the job. It may not be the most effective, but I think you can get there in most cases.
Totally. And it's pretty accessible, right? Like, you know, chances are, given the coverage the Microsoft suite has, most people have probably used it. And it's relatively straightforward, I guess, to, you know, draw shapes and manipulate them. And I've mentioned on other podcasts where I teach data viz at my company. I do a similar thing, but it's for Google Slides instead. But the same principle, you know, it's a great leveler. Because again, if you teach people like, hey, you should like, here's how you should maybe make things stand out, or here's how you like draw the eye to a certain data point on your viz, and then they're like, how do I do that? I can't do that in the basic software packages, you know, data viz packages. It's like, that's not very fair to say, you know. It's not very fair to get everyone excited and they can't execute on that. But if you do use tools such as PowerPoint or Google Slides, then that think-do gap is like greatly reduced, and they can just get on and make the viz or
Yeah, exactly. Okay. PowerPoint have actually introduced a suite of icons as well. So previously I've used Noun Project, and I did use Noun Project for that viz. I've got like a subscription, so you can go on there and just download any icons that you want. Kind of, they have everything. But you can actually get some in PowerPoint now as well. So it was actually Eva Murray that pointed me to that. I think I upgraded my PowerPoint and I got all these great icons, and there's a lot in there. So I mean, even if you don't have access to things like Noun Project, you can use PowerPoint for that now too, which is really good.
No, that's, I didn't know that. That's awesome. I'm a big fan of the Noun Project too. It's you either pay or you attribute it the shapes you get, and yeah, great, because it just saves you having to build those assets yourself. You just get back into building the wider viz or the creative thing you're working on. So,
great.
Excellent. Okay, next question. So what project is next for you after this one?
So I'm contemplating IronViz Feeder 1 for the main competition, but I'm hearing lots of bad things about the data set and it being difficult. So I need to explore that first and see how I get on. So I can't guarantee I'll be entering that. If not, I'm looking at doing a collaboration with Kevin Flerlage.
Cool.
So I think since doing IronQuest together, we thought it would be quite cool to do a collaboration. So he collaborated with Lindsay Benzendel. I've totally screwed her name, I'm sure, but sorry, Lindsay.
It's okay.
They did one on the leopard.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think I remember seeing that one. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, cheetah. Was it cheetah? What? Big cat.
Spotted cat with a pattern on it.
And on the for IronQuest, they teamed up and did this amazing viz. So we're looking at doing a collaboration. I'm not quite sure what on yet. That's still to be determined.
Oh, exciting. And exciting. Yeah. For anyone who's new to the podcast, we've actually, you said Kevin Flerlage, right?
Kevin, not Kevin.
Yeah, so,
Kevin,
yeah. Oh, that's cool. So he was guest number two. So, again, really great guy, great data visualizer. So, if anyone's curious about that, go check out that podcast too. But, I'm excited to see what you guys make.
Me too. It should be fun. Yeah.
Oh, amazing. Okay, great. Next question. Oh, yes. So before we get into the rapid fire area, is there anything you'd like to promote?
Yes. So, I mean, I've mentioned it a few times, so I think I'll promote IronQuest. So if anyone doesn't know, at the end of last year, after conference, I was thinking about how we could kind of get more people to participate in iInvis. I know it can be quite scary, especially with the element of having to sort your own data. And quite often people don't really know where to begin, or they may struggle to find data that's in a usable format. And I think there's this misconception that you need to have Alteryx or via Total Wiz at like ETL to actually be able to participate, which isn't the case. So I decided to start this project called iInquest, which is centered around the format of the iInvis feeders, where generally speaking, you source your own data around a topic. So you'd have a, I mean, for instance, in January, we did one on crime. So people went away, and it's a very broad topic, and sourced information on crime, whether that be crime in the local area, a particular type of crime, all kinds of things like that. And then just get people to try and build viz's that help practice those iInvis kind of measurables, which are design, storytelling, and analysis. Because I think sometimes it was very hard for one to build a viz that kind of ticks all those boxes. But I think quite often, especially at work, your viz's would probably be centered very much around analysis and maybe a little bit of design, maybe not so much storytelling. It's quite hard to hit all of those. So I thought it'd be quite a nice way for people to practice, and then also provide feedback. So for the last 3 months I've been running this, I've teamed up with people in the community to actually do a feedback call where we review the viz's where people have asked for feedback. So in month one, we visualized crime, and I teamed up with Timothy, who's the iInvis champion from last year. So month two, I teamed up with Anne Jackson. The theme was business dashboards, which was surprisingly popular. so people like building business dashboards. And then month three that just passed, it was environmental issues. And I teamed up with Kevin to go through the feedback for that. So we've had, I think, around 60 or so entries. Some people have entered every month. Yeah. But it's been really popular, and it's the variety of visits that we get. It's really interesting.
That's amazing. No, I'm looking at it now on your website. So I'm definitely, for those of you who are curious, everything we talk about too is going to be down in the show notes or the description below. So I'll totally put in, your website, but also the iInvis information too, because it's definitely something which it's a great project for all those reasons you just described. But also, just highly encourage anyone who's curious, even if you don't, ultimately want to enter iInvis, it's still a great experience to go through to kind of build up those skills and get that confidence and, have access to, experts who can give you feedback. So, it's a great thing.
Made a thing of not having any favorites. It's just everyone's viz gets published. There's no winner. It's not centered around that. And also, if you don't enter, it's quite nice at the end that we end up with a nice like a gallery of all the entries, which people can get inspiration from. So especially for the business dashboards ones, people were saying, "Oh, this is great. You know, I could use this at work," and which is really nice to see. So now, obviously, the iInvis feeder is on, so I don't want to detract from that. So there's no iInquest this month, but there's a break of about a month in between feeder one and feeder two. So I'll run another version in there. And also what I do is I put the topics out to vote on Twitter. So I'll pick four topics and then just see which one gets the most traction. And then that's the one we run with.
Amazing. Okay, cool. Yeah, no, I'll definitely encourage everyone to get on board with that. That's awesome. Yeah. And I'm looking at some of the dashboards now in the business area, and I'm like, damn, I could probably borrow quite a few of these. This is awesome. Great stuff. Great stuff. So iInvis, iInfeeder, this is brilliant. Cool. Yeah. Thank you for that. So we kind of reached the end of the flagship or the sort of tentpole of his deep dive, and it's been great. I've learned a lot already, but the point of the podcast is to actually get to know a little bit more about the person behind the viz too, because again, that's often a great source for inspiration and learning for people. So I'm just gonna throw a couple of rapid fire questions, so take as long or as little as you want to answer them. Let's dive in. So who or what publications around DataViz do you follow regularly?
So I follow a lot of the news publications, so like the Washington Post, the New York Times, the Pudding, some nice DataVizes. I'm on the DataViz Society, so I don't know if you've heard about that, which is
I have not, no.
Okay, so you should definitely check them out. So it's you can go on Twitter and have a follow them. Okay. And they've also got a Slack channel, which is a little bit crazy. They've got all these different channels in there. There's hundreds of people that talk about DataVids, but they have a channel on there where people publish inspiration or just visits that people can go and look at. And that's quite a good source that you've discovered all of these different like publications through.
Amazing.
That. Yeah. So yeah, that's kind of where my inspiration comes from. Just looking at Tableau Public as well and what other people are doing. If I see anything that I like in the feed, I'll favorite it. So I've got like a gallery of favorites that I can always go back to.
No, that's smart. Yeah, it's I think you touched upon a good point. I like getting inspired too. Seeing what's out there. Again, what resonates with your style or something you want to learn. And I think that's a good thing about Tableau Public. You know, if you see something you like, 99 times out of 100, you can actually go and favorite it, download it, backwards engineer it, or even ask the person who built it, because I often find everyone's pretty friendly on Tableau Public. Yeah. So that's cool. And okay, I'm going to check out that DataVis Society. I didn't know about it either. So
okay, definitely check it out. It's a worldwide thing. It was set up by Elijah Meeks and a few others, but it's there's just so much on there. Definitely check it out. Yeah,
amazing, cool, thank you. Okay, next question is, what would be your number one Tableau trick you'd like to share if someone's new to Tableau?
Okay, so there's a lot. I mean, there's a lot of things that you just don't know when you're new. I teach people at work Tableau and they see me do something. They're like, wait, how did you do that? So I think one trick that I find really useful, and it's not obvious, is the copy formatting from different sheets to another. And I use that quite a lot. I mean, I used it on my viz that we talked about at the beginning, where I built some charts and I wanted exactly the same kind of formatting on another similar chart. So you can just copy, highlight the tab at the bottom and right click, copy formatting, and paste it to another sheet. And it saves you having to do all the takeaway grid lines and getting the text the same size and things like that, which can take time. So,
No, that's great. I often forget about that one, but it is really powerful because it just saves you a ton of time and reduces human error and just ensures you spend as much of your time making a good viz, not having to fiddle around with all the small tiny things. No, that's a great tip. Thank you. Okay. Next question is what is your favorite chart type?
So I've got two. I like scatter plots. I think they're really powerful. I'd love it when the data lends itself to a scatter plot. You can instantly see, you can make it into quadrants. You can instantly see, standout, outliers. But I also like connected dot plots. Don't quite know why, but they're just, I just think they can look really cool. Like when you have almost that DNA kind of structure to them. It's nice to see the extreme, the best and the worst, for instance, on the different dots and the distance between them. So I think they're easy to read, they're intuitive, and they're just fun to build. So
that's good. I think I'm gonna make this more of a standard question. I'm gonna ask you, what are your thoughts on pie charts? Do you have any some love them and some hate them? It's a bit of a Marmite effect.
I'm not gonna say pie charts are evil. I mean, they have their place. But I would say if you really, really, really have to use a pie chart, then limit it to, I'd say, maximum of 3 segments. But in 9 times out of 10, it would be more effective to show it in a bar chart. I just think that to get that kind of comparison correct, you'd just be better off using a pie chart, or maybe a donut chart if you've got just 2 and you're assessing kind of progress to a goal. They can work quite well.
That's a good point.
So that's what I try and advise people anyway. So I'm like, have you thought about doing it this way? Or even just showing them a pie chart and showing them a bar chart and ask them, can you tell me what size that segment is? Or can you tell me where that bar is? You find generally they get the pie chart one wrong.
And then it's not doing its job of informing the user. Isn't good. That's good though. I like that. It's kind of like it's a it depends kind of question.
Totally.
Because I find there's sometimes because I think some are just like, no, never use them, but it's there's a time and a place. And
I think with some clients I work with, they're never going to stop using them altogether because people are familiar with them. So it's just trying to educate and showing them a better way. Like, don't put 12 segments on a pie chart and expect people to understand what it says. But
No, totally. And I think just on this previous guest in the last podcast, Joshua Smith, he actually again, his answer was like, it depends. But then he had a great example of a pie chart which did work, and it actually had like 200 slices. Because wow. The main objective was to actually show that one slice is about 48% and all the others are just teeny and insignificant. And I think it was the spending of each country on military. And obviously the big chunk was the US. But again, I think, it depends on the objective. And that one was quite powerful because you didn't need to know like, oh, you know, England's 2% and Japan's like 3%. All you needed to know was who's that big wedge? Okay, that's the main takeaway. So yeah,
yes, and in cases that's absolutely fine. It's when you've got like three or four very similar size segments, and you're asking someone to gain insight from that.
Yeah. Oh yeah, totally. Then totally a bar chart, because then it's like it's the human eye is not that good. Spotting stuff. So cool. Okay, great. So other than Tableau, what other tools or software have you been using?
So I've been learning a little bit of Power BI recently, and also Alteryx as well. So I'm just kind of beginning my like learning journey with those. Cool. Historically, I've come from a very much Excel background. So before I was introduced to Tableau, I had these amazing dashboards in Excel that I used to update every month. And then somebody enlightened me to Tableau.
Yeah,
But I mean, they've not... They're the kind of the main ones. So obviously I think I want to go away and learn Power BI. So then I mean, I'll be in a situation where I can actually argue which one is better than the other compared to Tableau. Right. So,
totally.
And I think there's some cases where Power BI might be better, and in some cases where Tableau will be better, but it would be nice if I can actually go away and have that, learn that for myself. And I'm sure I'll get frustrated along the way.
That's how you learn, right?
It'll be interesting. So that's currently where I'm at.
That's a very good point, because it is like, use the right tool for the right job, right? And if you don't know the other tool, you can't assess that. And but I think Tableau is very versatile and it can do a lot of things, but it's just always good to know if you're hitting a wall on one thing and you know how to do it on another tool, then that's perfectly valid. As long as you get... Yeah. You know, at the end of the day, it's to inform people, make good visits. Yeah, you use what's available rather than just, I think some people, do just drink the Kool-Aid and don't look at anything else.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't think I'm going to suddenly switch and be like, I'm going to do everything in Power BI now, because I think it's fantastic. No. But I still think there's probably a use case somewhere where it may fit.
Totally. But I think most of the time, Tableau is pretty compelling, but you're right. It's just those outliers, Actually, who am I to know? I haven't used Power BI. It could be amazing.
Exactly, right? I'll let you know.
thanks. Thank you. This is a good one. So what was your first version of Tableau?
So I think it was 8.4 or 8.3, one of the eights. So it was around 2015, I think. Something like that. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, so okay. Cool.
It was before they, because Tableau 10, they introduced the new shiny kind of look, right? And the default. So it was pre that, when it was all very kind of, you know, different default colors, and just the whole kind of whole look and feel was completely different.
Yeah. No. I think that's a good one to get into again. It's I think the older the version you use, the more appreciative or the more slack you might cut the newer versions, because you kind of remember where the state it was in, and you're like, oh my god, it's so much better than it was. And
I mean, we didn't have LODs in that version. I remember when LODs came out. Things like that. So
the pre LOD world is not fun, but but again, they listened, and to the users, they threw a ton of engineers at it, and now we have it, which is great. And that's one of the reasons I quite like Tableau, because they they listen, and where it makes sense, they'll actually try and fix it, which is cool.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many things that I've been wanting for ages that are now in the product. And people ask me now, what would you like to see next? It's quite difficult, because, you know, a lot of those things I've always been my default go-tos are now in the product, like transparent sheets I've been asking for ages. Now it's here. So I'm kind of having to look for more things, you know. And it's been more and more difficult, because there's more and more in the tool now. And it's so hard to keep up as well and learn these new like functions. like set actions and parameter actions and things that
are
coming in. Yeah. Really powerful,
You're right. I need to. I'm aware of those, like the proportional brushing and all that stuff with set actions. Look great. I just haven't had a chance to sit down and sink my teeth into them yet. But but I think it's a good problem to have when there's so many new things coming out in a tool that.
Which
is cool. But actually, this is funny because it leads me on to the next question, which is what one feature would you like to see? apart from all the amazing ones they have brought out.
So I'd like to see more. I know it may not be so applicable in a business sense, but just make it easier to build a dashboard. I mean, for me, I think it's still a little bit clunky and it's a little bit more too difficult than it should be. There's some simple things like being able to copy a text box and just duplicate it. Take all that
annoying
formatting. Yeah, so I mean, currently you have to just literally start again from scratch. There's also, I actually added this to the ideas forum, but if you look on Ask Data, when you hover over your dimensions or measures, you get a nice kind of preview of like breakdown, like you get like a bar chart of what your data looks like. If you hover over country, it shows you how many values are in each country in that left-hand pane. That would be really cool if they brought that into desktop. Looking at Describe or without bringing anything into the view, you get like a little preview of what your data looks like. To some extent, I mean, in Tableau Prep, you get that kind of the blue shading to show what's in each category. But if they had that in desktop, I think that'd be really cool.
Yeah, totally. Because right now I find the workflow, because I don't use Prep right now, but yeah, you have to look at the data, you have to kind of put it into a sheet or a couple of sheets, figure out what you're looking at. Then if there's an issue, you've got to go back a bit suboptimal. So no, that's a good feature or a couple of features to think about. I'll see if they exist in the feature request forums, but if not, I'll try and raise one and put a link in the show notes or description.
The last one definitely does because I raised it. So.
Oh, great. Yeah, if you could share that with me afterwards, I'll put it down. Excellent. Okay, cool. We'll get a few more votes on that one. Brilliant. Yeah. Okay, cool. So we've actually reached the end of all the questions, but we've actually got a bit more time. So I was just thinking... not to put you on the spot, but you're the co-lead of the London Tableau User Group. And it looks like you guys do some amazing stuff out there and you get great speakers and you get quite an engaged audience. So I guess two questions for you. I guess the first one is, for those of you who don't know what a Tableau User Group is, how would you go about like describing it to someone or like what they could get out of it if they attended?
Yeah, sure. So... I mean, I remember when I was starting my journey and one of the first things I did was attend a Tableau user group, London one, funny enough, and I didn't quite know what I was getting myself in for. But it's essentially all the Tableau users in that local area come together. They talk about maybe use cases where like you may have people present from a business where they're showing something that they're doing in Tableau. You could have Tableau speakers talking about new features. Quite often have that in London where we get people from Tableau to come in and show us what's coming in new versions or things that have just come out. And it's also a really great way to network with other people in your area. So chances are there's somebody there that's maybe in your industry or facing a similar challenge to you, or maybe even someone that's not even using Tableau yet and they want to get a job using Tableau. It's a really great place to go and make those connections and meet other people. So I know at London Tug, we generally have two or three speakers, and at the end we have a networking session where people can just eat pizza and have a beer and just chat and meet other people, which is really cool.
No, that's awesome, because I guess secretly I was asking because I also run the Singapore Tableau user group, and I was just trying to figure out like how you perceive it, but also it's great to hear that you guys do pizza too. Pizza seems to be a great way to get people in, but also facilitate chat, and who doesn't like pizza, right?
So. I know, right? I mean, one thing we try and do is we plan out our tugs for the entire year in December. So we pencil in some dates and we put together a wish list of speakers and we aim really high. So we put names on there that we just know we're never going to get, but at least we could, if you don't ask, you don't get. So we reach out to these people and see if they're around. And by doing that, we managed to get Alberto Cairo last year, which is amazing.
Yeah.
And just we're lucky because we're in London. A lot of people pass through London for other things. They might be delivering a training, and we've had Cole Nussbaum and Affleck twice because she's been in London doing training, and she's just been really lovely, and that she's come in and spoken to the user group. So we try and get people, like I said, big names, but also people from outside the Tableau community. So I think that's quite important that we have a sense of what's going on in the data visualization world, not just in the Tableau, like kind of bubble. So you'll see a lot of our speakers that we have a mixture of very Tableau centric people and also people that are maybe in like data journalism or other fields.
Oh, amazing. And just for those of you who are listening and aren't familiar with Tableau User Group, this is all free as well, right? It's free and
everyone,
So it's just a bunch of passionate users who have formed this group and, line stuff up and just get everyone together. So, there's no harm in going down. If you're in any industry which, deals with data, or you're just curious in the subject or the topics, I'd highly recommend you find a user group in your area and go down.
Yeah.
So. And it's amazing that there are people like you who are like, just enjoy doing this stuff and help people at scale by, allowing this focal point for users to get together and, network and share and bring amazing guests. Because, again, it takes a lot of work, I'm sure, to like organize and all for communication. So thank you.
Yeah, we're really fortunate. There's five of us and we've got Pablo who does this. Recordings as well. So generally speaking, you can watch our user groups live and all the recordings are on YouTube as well, which is really cool. So we have people tuning in from around the world, because if we're doing one at 6 o'clock UK time, generally that's the middle of the day in the US, and people can tune in while they're at work and watch these sessions, which is really cool.
Totally. I might have to trade notes with Pablo. We haven't started recording our Singapore user groups yet, but I think
it's just an iPad and an app that he uses. So it's not a particularly sophisticated setup, but it works.
Okay, cool. Exciting. Yeah. That's good. It's good to know. Okay, I'll have to check that out. But I think that's a great that you guys are doing that, because then it's kind of, I guess, you reach more people at scale. And also it's not just, the content you make has just got that lifespan in those couple of hours. Anyone can enjoy it whenever they have time, I guess.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
I mean, quite often I'll go back and watch them because I'm so busy on the night, I might be out of the room for a bit, and it's quite nice to watch them back at the end and just consume the content without those distractions.
Amazing. So I think from what I can tell, there's user groups all around the globe. So it's not just in like major capital cities, which is awesome. And I believe, I might be wrong, but you might be able to help me out with this. I think Tableau has a webpage, right, which helps people find their closest user group.
Yeah, it's on the community forums, and there's a map that shows where all the user groups are. I think there's about 400 worldwide.
Wow.
It's growing all the time. People are constantly starting new ones up. And you also have the industry ones. So you've got like the healthcare tags, the retail tags, banking, insurance. And some of those are virtual as well, which is quite cool. So if you don't live anywhere near a user group, you can join a lot of these virtually.
Oh, I did not know that, but that makes sense though. Virtual, because because not everyone will be around in those places.
No. So you've got like the healthcare tag has a virtual kind of branch, which is cool. So
cool. I can imagine the finance one, they all just complain about not being able to share data with anyone and get really annoyed. We have that in Singapore. It's like, hey, we can do all this cool stuff. I can't. I have to like write a letter to get data, and it's like, sounds so painful. But exciting. Okay, that's great. So that's it for this episode. So thank you for listening, and be sure to check out the show notes for everything we've covered today. And if you're new to the podcast, consider subscribing to stay up to date with all the latest episodes. Also visit datasaurus-rex.com/welcome to see all of the other data visualization content we have to help you out. Until the next time, thank you.